In our usual summary, we're in the second doctrinal section of the book of Romans, the imputation, the doctrine of justification. We've studied the presentation of justification, the principles of justification, and we're in chapter 5, the privileges of justification. We studied the seven principles of the inheritance, verses 1 through 11, and the penalty of sin contrasted and compared with the provision of the sacrifice in verses 12 through 21. As we pointed out to you last week, the lines that of emphasis in Romans 5, 10 through 11, that give us our introduction to the section that we're in. Remember in verse 10, Paul said that it was through the death of his son that we are reconciled. So he's mentioning one person and one way people can be reconciled, and we will be saved in his life. One person in his life. And it's through Jesus Christ, in verse 11, through whom now we received the reconciliation. So it triggers in the mind of the Hebrew or Jewish person this oneness, that indeed through one person and one person's death one time, that's the provision for our reconciliation back to God. So Paul is, and verse 12 is our summary statement, diatuto, on account of this, making reference back to those two verses, Romans 5, verses 10 and 11. Here we have a comparison of the entrance of sin and death. Hosper, remember the words that come with hos, hosper, or any other combination of words denote a comparison. That just as the sin entered through one man into the world, and again, ace, the emphasis on ace in line 1874 is that sin was an outside force already existing and came into the world, and the death principle, both physical and spiritual, the death entered into the world through the sin. And so, houtos, the adverb, is what lines up with hosper. In other words, as indeed, and so in this way, the death, hothanatos, passed through or spread into all men, upon which principle? What principle is that? We saw last week, its antecedent is death, upon which all sinned. And notice the line of beyond hamartone that brings us to page, actually 656 for tonight. 656. We introduced to you last week a new way in which we're going to to do these verses. I'll be presenting them to you in the same formula and system in which we make the diagrams. Again, you've got the completed diagram on page 656. We have up on the screen verse 13, which is the comparison of the existence of sin and death. Before, we had the comparison of the entrance of sin and death, that death entered the same way sin. In fact, through sin, death entered into the world. Therefore, all sinned. And notice hamartone is up at the top. That's the verb we're working off of down in verse 13. And notice it's in order of the Greek text. Achri, gar, nomu. Achri is a very interesting word. You have in your notes that I don't have in mine. Achri is actually an adverb, adverb of time. It can also be used as a preposition which is what it's used here. It is akri, is in preposition form, is used with the genitive case. And so we look down our line here and we see akri gar nomu. Hamartia is in the nominative case. And by the way, as far as diagramming or sensing the relationship of words, if you have a sentence like this, it's best you go through and identify each one of these phrases or each one of these words prior to putting a diagram together. Gar is postpositive, so it is going to be translated first in this sentence. We see that akhri can stand by itself as an adverb or be used as a preposition with the genitive case, and we have a genitive case right here. So we know that akhri is being used with the genitive case. So we leave akhri there, we bring gar down, we've got to bring nomu down. All of these are going to be on their own lines as we bring them down, and we have formed our preposition akhri nomu. Gar is postpositive. With gar coming off of hamarton, gar is indicating that he's giving an explanation. And again, this has to do with the existence of sin and death. We have our prepositional phrase off on the side. We have nothing to attach it to at this time. Remember that prepositions work off of verbs. Okay, we don't have our verb yet. Hamartia is nominative case. That's our subject. Ain, imperfect tense. There's our verb. And en kosmo is a prepositional phrase that's going to work with our verb. So we have our subject. Next in line is the verb. And notice how all the lines fell into place. Once we brought the verb over, next we've got the subject going to the verb, gar goes to the verb, and from the verb we go up to our preposition. And so our diagram starts filling out. Remember, you're going from a former or the last main verb down to the connecting conjunction. This connecting conjunction is going to go down to the main verb, wherever it might be. Sometimes it's way at the end of the sentence. But this connecting conjunction is going to go to the main verb, and we just happen to have it right here at the beginning. Hamartia is the subject. Ain, imperfect tense, showing existence, continual existence. Sin was, then akhri nomu, until law. Akhri here is a preposition of time. Up until the law, right before the law was given, sin was in existence, imperfect tense. Our next phrase is en kosmo, which is a prepositional phrase, and it's going to work off of the verb. So we already have our verb. We go en kosmo, and ein is going to continue down because now we have the second half of the second section. Hamartia is your nominative case verb. De is postpositive, so there's our conjunction. Uk is your negative particle. Elogetai is your verb. And then the last phrase, a participial phrase, your negative me, present participle, ontos for existing, and nomu, genitive case, law. So our next one to move in line is our subject. We move that down, and then comes de, which is postpositive. De is working off of ein. The subject is still working down. And remember, when these conjunctions join up with the verb, it's looking for the next verb, okay? Because Greek is a language of verbs. And so it's looking for the next verb. We have a negative particle. Negative particle is always going to go with the verb, okay? Not a noun, but a verb. And so we have uk. That's our next one in line, and that also is going down to the verb wherever it may be. I always get the feeling when I look at these and we diagram them that all of these parts of speech are drilling for oil. They're looking for the verb. But you've got your connecting conjunction, you've got your subject, you've got your negative particle, and elogetai is our verb. So we do a space, we go down and put our verb in line, subject, sin, not, this negative particle. Elogetai is your present passive indicative, to be imputing something to someone's account. And it's negated. And sin is not being imputed. And the reason, we're going to have a negative first. We're going to have the participle right after it. And remember, a participle is a verbal adjective. Therefore, it can take the negative. It can receive a subject if there is a subject. It can take a direct object. It can take an indirect object, just like a regular verb, except for the fact that participles are working off of the main verb. So the negative is not, and then existing or being, and the subject is nomu, genitive case. Since ontos and nomu are genitives, we have a genitive absolute, with nomu being the subject. So this works out. All have sinned, and by way of explanation, the emphasis on the existence of sin and death is that until the law, sin was, imperfect tense, continually existing in the world, location, en kosmo, your connecting conjunction, and sin, or you can even say, but sin, is not being imputed, they're not being law. Now, we've discussed this a couple of times as we've been going through here about, well, if there is no law and sin was in the world, then how could God, in all fairness, hold people accountable for their sins? But that's not what he's dealing with here. We know from other places, and just as Paul has explained to us in chapter 2, he presented to us in quite a lengthy presentation that Gentiles are judged by their conscience. And that God doesn't need the law in order to hold people accountable. We will see at the end of this chapter that the law is given in order to emphasize and intensify sin. It exposes sin. Just because there is no law doesn't mean people are not responsible to God. And we're not looking at it from a religious standpoint, we're looking at it from a spiritual standpoint. Is that I am a created being, and God has, according to Scripture, and as we know, God has the capability of reaching me. Period. If I'm the only human being on the earth, and there's God, he's perfectly capable of enlightening me to the truth by his Spirit and holding me accountable without ever having anybody told me what I need to do to get saved or not get saved or whatever the case may be. So keep this in mind, is that here, Paul is not addressing the issue of the fact that just because there is no law, and just because sin was not imputed to people's account doesn't mean that they were not held responsible. That's not his point. His point is that if law was here, law would expose sin. Thou shalt not kill. So if you kill, you have sinned, right? Without the law, you have nothing there to tell you what is sin or that sin even exists, because you don't know what sin is. So the telltale sign that sin exists is there's death. See? So it's not, the text is not about a discussion about how God reaches people. And is God fair to bring, was God fair to bring the judgment of the flood? There's no law. Was it fair to hold them accountable and bring judgment? What about Sodom and Gomorrah? Was it fair to bring judgment against Sodom and Gomorrah? Because God's Spirit was working on the earth long before the law. And people were called righteous because of their faith. Where'd that come from? You know, if there was no law, where'd they get faith from? Where'd they get a relationship from? It's all by the Spirit of God. So in verse 13, this first part, he's showing the existence. You see, sin existed in the world. There not existing a law. But sin was not imputed. Page 658. And notice on page 656, out from Ain, there are two lines. That is your connecting verb to bring in these next two contrasts. Verse 14 on page 658 is the contrast of the establishment of sin and death. The contrast of the establishment of sin and death. Now, we say contrast because of the conjunction that opens up this line. The conjunction is working off of ain. That's your main verb from the clause, from the verse 13 right before it. So, al or Allah, depending on which text you have, both words mean the same thing. Remember, as soon as you have Allah in the text, it's a red light flashing saying sharp contrast. Sharp contrast. In other words, sin existed in the law and there is no imputation for that sin. But in sharp contrast. Okay? So that's our connecting link in line as we go across. And again, I encourage you that if you are into, some of you have contacted me about diagramming, even just to understand the diagram, this is what we do. We haven't done it here on this slide, but you can go through, you can break it down into parts. Hothanatos is your subject. Apo Aram, your prepositional phrase. Mechri Moseos, prepositional phrase. Connecting conjunction. Epi, so that introduces a prepositional phrase. Tus me hamartesantas, that's all one prepositional phrase. Epito homoiomati is one prepositional phrase. Genitive case, tes parabaseos, the transgression genitive case of Adam. Your relative pronoun, antecedent going back to Adam. Your verb, your direct object, and then your genitive case showing possession of the tupos. So we can see that we have our connecting conjunction. We also see that we have our main verb right here, ebasilusen, which is an aorist tense. It comes from the word basileus, which means king. So that's why it's translated ruling. So on our next line, we see we have our connecting conjunction coming down to the verb. And so Paul here has done us a favor in that he has put the verb close to the top. So we almost have a regular sentence here forming, because here's the subject, hothanatos, here's the verb. So as we go down to the verb, we go down to hothanatos, the definite article for thanatos, coming down as its modifier, and then from thanatos going back up to the verb. From here we have two prepositional phrases. Watch how this works. Apo aram. So, apo aram is coming off of the verb. Preposition always works off of the verb. Another preposition right after it. Mechri moseos. Mechri with the genitive comes right after that. Now, here's another one of those words that I told you about achri before. This is mechri right here. This would be word 2086 on page 659, and it is actually an adverb, just like achri is. It's an adverb that can be used for time and place. It is a preposition with the genitive, again, time and place. and a conjunction that means until. It can be used three different ways: as an adverb, adverb of time, or adverb of place. It can be used as a preposition, but takes the genitive case, which is what we have here. And it also designates time and place, especially when you're doing a comparison between times. We've presented two times here, from Adam and until Moses. So we've got a time gap here, which for Paul required two prepositional phrases. Personal choice of the author. I personally have found, again, mekri is used in comparative times when you're comparing one time with another. Akri has to do with a beginning of time. You can hear RK in there, in the makeup of the word. So here, mekri is again the choice of author, and it's his choice some 17 times. So this is his favorite. Where Akri was, well, if you sure, if he does, he can, because he would want to use it or feel led to use it, yes, he could have. But he, in as far as being an astute student and writing, he would use Akri because you're only dealing with one element here, until the law. You're not dealing from one point up to another. You see what I'm saying? So there's... Paul has this style that he'll use one word to show you up until a time and then another time from this to this. Okay. Good question. So much so that you get to teach next week. So we have our sentence forming, but in sharp contrast with the existence of sin and the existence of no law and no sin being imputed, but in sharp contrast, ruled the death. Notice again the definite article. Death ruled. So now it's established. We saw its entrance. We saw its existence. And now it's ruling. And it's in the aorist tense, ebasilusen. Death is now on the throne over mankind. And death ruled from Adam until Moses. There's our time gap. And notice right after these, we have a chi that's going to be used for emphasis. Epi tous me hamartesantas is all one prepositional phrase. If you notice on your pages, the parsing of this, tous is an accusative plural. Hamartesantas is an accusative plural. Tous is an article that's standing by itself, therefore it's being used substantively. Upon the ones, not aorist participle, see the sigma alpha here? The ones having not sinned. Even or also, see how this looks. Page 658. Coming down from ebasilusen, we have epi and tous. And remember, prepositional phrases, the normal ones are just epi with the word that is used as the object of the preposition. It can take the article as here, as well as here, but epi tous, the ones, that is an article describing or modifying hamartesantes. The negative particle me is also hamartesantes because it is a preposition or participle. It is a verbal adjective, and therefore it can take the negative particle for here. Chi is used as our modifier. We put our lines in. We say even or also upon the ones not having sinned. Now, wait a minute. We just had a time frame. We had a time frame that told us that death ruled from Adam until Moses. And now we're saying even or also upon the ones not having sinned. What is he trying to say here? Let's finish this out. We have a prepositional phrase that's coming next in the Greek text, and we don't have to look for a main verb. Notice the prepositional phrase comes right after hamartesantos. Hamartesantos is just functions like a regular verb because it's a verb modifier here in this sentence. Epi, to, homoiomati, and the definite article is modifying homoiomati, and epi is coming off of the verb, the verbal aspect of hamartesantos. And because of its order that is found in the sentence, this prepositional phrase is going to go with the participle. As we continue to go down, we have tes parabasaos, aram, which are all genitive cases. So it's going to describe for us upon the likeness of the transgression. So this the genitive case is going to show us what the likeness is, what possesses the likeness. We go back to this word, homoiomati, and it's interesting because it doesn't necessarily mean identical. It is the same in that it is similar, that it resembles, or something happens in the same way. So, upon the likeness, notice the negative, even those who had not sinned, upon the likeness, or genitive case, definite article, parabasaos, of the transgression, or trespass, as I like to say, genitive case, of Adam. And so, before we get into this little part right here, which is a transition in our text about the presentation of Paul here, what he's saying here is that sin existed. There was no imputation for sin because there was no law in existed, and that death ruled from Adam until Moses, even upon the ones who had not sinned upon the likeness of the transgression of Adam. Some of the theological theories dealing with this section right here, what he's saying is the people who sinned and were in sin from Adam to Moses, they experienced death because they sinned and sin was in them, but they were not being judged for the same sin that Adam committed. Okay? Now that's Pelagius. He was known for that. He says that you're born into this world and you're not a sinner until you commit the sin that Adam committed. Well, you can see what Paul's saying here. He's saying when Adam sinned, and we'll see this as he develops, we go through these verses, that when Adam sinned, sin came into the world and spread into all men. That was the opening line in verse 12. And so man is born with a sin nature. Sin passed through the whole human race. But you look back, I didn't commit Adam's sin. I mean, I might have broken a command, but hey, I didn't touch any fruit trees. You know? So what Pelagius says is that I'm not a sinner until I sinned. But I sin upon my own original sin, you see. And that's why Augustine had to come in with the original sin, which is not in the text. The term original sin is not in the text, but his emphasis was back in verse 12 that when sin entered into the world, that sin passed upon all men. And one of Augustine's arguments was this very statement here, as well as the verse 12 about sin entering into the world. Now, all of the people who did sin from Adam until Moses, they all died. Hence, there was sin in the world, and they were sinners. But they didn't commit the same trespass as Adam did. We're talking about a single act that Adam did. Adam just didn't do something wrong. Verse 12 emphasizes to us that it was the time that sin entered into the world. So it was through his transgression that sin entered in and passed through all the human race. So we've inherited from him this sin principle. And Paul very pointed here to say that during this time frame, when no sin was being imputed, but yet death was in existence, sin was in existence, there was no imputation, there was no law, but even upon those who had not sinned upon the likeness, notice the singular, of the transgression of Adam, even upon them, they died, whether they committed the same sin as Adam or not, because they're sinners. Down here at the bottom of the screen, you see the antecedent line, Adam. We see the rest of our Greek sentence here in order. Hos is a relative pronoun that's going to point back to Adam, who is estin, tupos, a type, tu melontos, of the one about to come. Let's see how this fits together. Adam, your relative, goes down to your relative pronoun. The relative pronoun must match in gender number case when it's making reference back to the antecedent. Sometimes it does not match in case, especially when you have if you have the preposition and, which demands that the dative case be used. But that's why the writer will not use that. He will use a hos, which is the nominative singular masculine. Adam, who, the next word is a verb. The next word is a nominative case, and the nominative case is the direct object of the ame verb. Estin is present active indicative of ame. Therefore, tupos, being the direct object, is going to be in the nominative case, okay? Our ame verb rule. But now we have a genitive case here. We have an article with a present participle, melontos, the coming one. And it's phrased differently in different translations, but it's interesting that this is making reference to the one who is about to come, who has already come, but this is a title and a designation for Christ. In fact, when John the Baptist, you remember he was in prison and he sent the disciples and say, are you the one who is to come? Are you the coming one? Or do we look for another? This phrase is used in Romans 8:18, where Paul says, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed to us, which is about to be revealed in us. That's Romans 8:18. It's also used in 1 Peter 5:1. 1 Peter 5:1, Peter says, to the elders which are among you, I exhort, who am also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory which is about to be revealed. Same phrase is used. Anything for the glory, for the coming of the Lord, anything of God's promises that are coming, including the Messiah, this phrase is used. And the English texts try to smooth it out, because if you just say, of the coming one, and somebody reads it and goes, what does that mean? This is bad English. They forgot some words or something. That there would have to be a footnote to say that this is a phrase making reference to the coming one being Jesus Christ, the Messiah. And this is why I say right here is a transition in Paul's writings, because up till now he has shown how sin entered and death entered the world through Adam, and how death passed upon all men, therefore sin passed upon all men. And the focus has been on Adam, who is a type of the coming one. And as we mentioned to you last week, 1 Corinthians 15:45 says, "The first man, Adam, was made a living soul, and the last Adam was made a life-giving spirit." He's also called in chapter 15 the last man, the second man. So Adam is called the first man in theology. Christ is called the second Adam. Adam means man, by the way, even though he's named that in the text. Adam is also a word for human being. So we see the theology of Paul forming actually two heads. A person is either from under the headship of Adam or under the headship of Christ. We're all born under the headship of Adam, in that we've all sinned. But those who receive, who believe and receive through Jesus Christ, he then becomes the head. So there's two heads. A person is either under Adam or under Christ. It's the only two. It's not religion now. We're talking about a spiritual birth into the family of God, which is also why in Jewish literature and Paul's writings, there's an emphasis on birth. You're born into God's family. It's a spiritual birth that takes place. From this time on now, from verse 14 on, we're going to be emphasizing through one man in contrast through another man, through Adam and through Christ. These two heads now he's established for them and for us why there can be only through one man death, and that death be for our sins. Because he's proved to them through their own theology that through one man, sin entered into the world and the whole human race is affected by it. So to say that salvation comes through one man, though he's going to be pointed to say it's not distributed in the same way, you're born into one automatically, you're born into the other one by faith. It's not automatic. The universalists will say it's automatic. Christ died for the sins of the whole world, therefore everybody's saved. Everybody's going to go to heaven. At least that's their belief. So on page 664, we're at verse 15. The third part now, the contrast and comparison of the effect of grace and death. The effect of grace and death. The contrast and comparison, both of them. Both contrasts and comparisons are used on the effect. We've had the entrance, we've had the existence, we've had the establishment. Death ruled. Now, what is the effect of that, that he's going to theologically establish for us? And I remember back at Ain, we had two lines coming out. One went to one Allah. That was the last verse. The second line coming from Ain also comes down to another Allah. So right away, no matter what is made up in this sentence, as soon as you have Allah, you have a contrast. And it's contrasting even though sin existed, and even though no sin is imputed, and even though there is no law back in that time. But in contrast to that, and notice our next word in line in the Greek text is a negative particle. And we know that's going to go with the verb, wherever it might be. So we have to put that, we know that Allah is going to go down to the verb. Wherever we find that verb, the connecting conjunction is coming off of one verb and going to your next main verb. The negative particle is also going to the main verb, but we don't have that yet. But what we do have is after the negative particle, we have hos to paraptama. And here's hos. And we said that hos is used to express comparison. So here's where we have this, what would appear to be a very confusing presentation by Paul, in that he presents a contrast by way of comparison. He's going to use a negative comparison to show by way of contrast what he's trying to say. So if we follow carefully, we'll see here that hos, to paraptama, and to, the article to, goes with paraptama. So this is our phrase of comparison. So we have uk coming down. We have our phrase, comparative phrase, formed as hos. To is modifying paraptama. And that's all we've got right now as we're going through our sentence. Next is the adverb hutos, which also is going to go down to the main verb. There is no verb yet. So hutos is going to go down to our main verb, wherever it might be. And then we have a conjunction, and that's either going to be a modifier or a connector for us. And we find out that once we get down to to charisma, which is a noun, is that there is no verb at all in this first part of the sentence. To charisma is your subject. So therefore, if you have no verb, all of the connecting parts go to the subject. It's your next eligible word, okay? So you have your conjunction, but going down to your subject, to charisma. You have your negative going down to charisma. You have your adverb, which normally modifies a verb, going down to charisma. You have chi for also or even, showing emphasis going down. And then off on the side of charisma, it goes up to this comparative phrase, as the transgression. And so we have some people, when they diagram, they will put in a verb in parentheses just to keep all sentences even. They will put in what is implied as the verb, and they will put it in parentheses and make the diagram off of the implied verb to make all the sentences read the same. That basically gives you the meaning, but since the writer didn't put it in, it's not going to give you the original as the writer put it in. You're not wrong if you want to write the verb in, which is the word estin is. But the gift in this way also is not as the transgression. So it negates charisma. It says, not in this way as in the transgression. So we have a contrast telling us that the gift of God is not in the same way also as the transgression itself. So now he's taking the death and sin came into the world as it all came through Adam, but the grace and the gift of God that came through Jesus Christ is not the same in comparison. In fact, they are in contrast with each other. In other words, if sin came in through Adam and Jesus Christ died on the cross 2,000 years ago, and I obviously was born after that, some people would argue that. But that therefore, once I was born in the world, I should have inherited my sin nature from Adam and should have inherited my salvation from Jesus Christ all at one time. Or as some groups say, well, when you're water baptized as a baby, then you gain the inheritance through Christ. No, they enter into the world the same way, but its application and its function in this world is different. Now, we did a special study on the differences between the word for gifts. And this would be the time in which we come. He uses charisma, and he will use a couple of other nouns here, dorea, for one. Charisma being the expression of grace, when it's used in association with these other words, also translated gift, charisma is the cause. And dorea, the other words, would be the effect. The cause of God's grace into the world is grace, charisma, expression of grace. Didn't come from Satan, didn't come from any transgression. And notice how he's negating here and saying that charisma, the expression of grace, the gift that comes from God to counter this sin, it's not as the transgression. In comparison, because it's in contrast. But as we continue to go down from charisma, the gift, on page, hate to say it, 666, we're showing now that at the bottom of charisma, there was a line coming down to continue on, giving by way of explanation. Notice after charisma in the Greek text, there is a gar to tu henos paraptomati. So we have if. So whenever you see the if, it's introducing a conditional clause. See how these words tip you off as to what's coming up next. It is a conditional clause, and up till now we don't know what kind of conditional clause it is. And we know that gar is postpositive and it comes second. And that's the connecting conjunction that has to come under charisma. So we put A aside. We do have a line coming up to A because that conditional clause has to be connected into the sentence from someplace. And up till now, we don't know where. So gar is postpositive, and gar is also going down in its search for the verb. So it's all the connecting conjunction is always coming off of the noun or verb, and the only time it's going to come off of the noun is because there is no verb. So when a sentence is completely nouns and conjunctions and adverbs, there's no verb, that is a nominal sentence. A nominal sentence. A regular, normal sentence in Greek is verbal. Verbal. Therefore, on a nominal sentence, you can have the connecting conjunction come off of charisma, the noun, and gar actually be connected to a verb in the next clause. It can go from nominal to verbal with a connecting conjunction. Okay? So we have our conditional clause A just sitting there. If. We have no idea what it's making reference to as we're working our way through. But then we have, after gar, we have a dative case. To, genitive case, tu henos, the one, and paraptamati is the dative case from paraptama. So this article, dative case article, goes with this dative case noun. In between the two is a genitive case, article, and numerical of the one, the of the one transgression. This phrase, do you remember what this is called when it splits the article from its noun and you put some words in between? What position is this? Nope. No. Attributive position. Attributive position. Substantive is when it's when a noun is standing by itself and representing something that's not there. So this is the of one transgression. But notice the one in between here, that article. The article is modifying henos. It's the one. So the transgression of the one is how it would read in English. But the way Paul has presented it, it is the of the one transgression. So there's one man. Remember, he's starting to make a division here and comparisons between the one who transgressed contrasted with the one who brought salvation. So this is how it's going to look. We have our article. We keep our articles with our nouns, genitive case, article, with henos, and paraptomati, the word for transgression. I always like to use the word trespass. I know King James uses transgression, and I use it all the time, but in my mind's eye, the word literally means to fall off the path. In other words, it would be equivalent to seeing a no trespassing sign. If you cross over that line, you have trespassed. You're into an area that you're not supposed to be. And that's what the law would tell you in the Old Testament, the Tanakh. The law would tell you what God's law says, and if you trespassed it, you're a trespasser, and therefore a transgressor. And that's the word that is used here. The trespass or the transgression of the one. Notice how the line comes up from the noun, because the genitive case can either be on top or of the on the bottom, but he's showing us that it goes with paraptamati because of the article here. And this is in the attributive position. Again, going back to its original form, you can see it right here. And the article to going with paraptamati. So now we have a conjunction with nothing to go with it. We have our connecting conjunction. We have a dative case. So this would be like the indirect object here that has an attributive position designation with it. Next in line is hoi polloi. And this, if you remember your cases, this is your nominative plural. So this is your subject, the many. And we have to diagram it so that hoi is modifying polloi. And that's what we do. So we have, here's all of our phrases, and they're kind of scattered. Some are not connected. Apethanon now, this aorist tense word, is our verb. Apethanon is died. And so once we put this into the equation, we don't have any lines yet, but here's your verb that is for this conditional clause. And what's going to happen is from A is going to come down to this verb, hoi polloi, the subject is going to come down to this verb, and we're going to draw a line up to the dative case, which is right up above it. And this is what it looks like. So the only thing we do not have, this line coming up to A, this clause, conditional clause, is actually sitting there by itself. We don't have a connecting verb to this as of yet, but we are going to. I can guarantee you that. So, yes? Because we're going to see it also here, the many, for the many. That's his phrase to say the many who are experience death because of sin, and the many who are going to be saved. But not all are going to be saved. You can't say all versus all. You see what I'm saying? You can't say all have sinned and all have been saved. Well, the many that have sinned, they are the same group who are the many. These many out of the all. Right, exactly. Yes. And that's what this phrase right here is, polo malon. It indicates for us that we're getting ready to look at a comparison phrase here. So we've completed our conditional clause, and on page 668, we're cutting the line off and showing you that as we continue, polo malon, malon is a comparative adverb. It's an adverb. Adverbs modify verbs. So malon is modifying a verb by showing comparison. It is a comparison. So it's translated more than, or rather than, okay? Now, this is very interesting because polo, we just had poloi used as a noun. It's actually an adjective that can be used as an adverb to modify another adverb. That's what we have here. Instead of more, we have much more. Okay? By itself, polos means much, used as an adjective. Here it is used as an adverb to modify a comparative adverb. Okay? So, and this combination is seen five times in this chapter alone. And whenever you see this, because it's a comparative adverb, and he's adding much more in comparison, you have a comparative phrase here. You had a conditional clause to start out with, but we don't know really what do we have to work with here. We don't have Allah, which would show us contrast. We have Gar, which shows us explanation. But as soon as we get to this part, polo malon tells us that we're dealing with a comparative presentation. Much more than what we just studied. We'll put it together here in a second. So polo malon is going down to wherever this verb is going to be. Gar is coming down to wherever this verb is going to be. Next in line after malon is hekaris, the subject, the grace. Tu theou, genitive case, the grace of the God. Kai, connecting conjunction. But the next phrase will tell us what is connecting with. He dorea is the gift. That's nominative case, so kai is joining it with karis. Let's see how it puts together. We put the subject over here on the side with its definite article. We put the genitive case. It is the grace of God, possessive genitive, who possesses the grace. Then we have the kai. We can see that it's not with the genitive, it's with the nominative, because that's what next is nominative, so it's joining up these nominative cases to hey doria. And then that is going to, we have a line coming in here. This is going to serve as the subject, and it's going to come down. We could have put an independent line from Karis going down looking for the verb as well as all of these others, but we just joined it up with this conjunction and decided to go piggyback down onto the verb wherever it might be. So much more, the grace of God and the gift. We said that charisma denoted the cause, doria is the effect. God's grace, the effect of that, we'll find out in verse 17, is the gift of righteousness. The gift of righteousness is given, charisma, out of grace. Okay? So we continue on. Enkadati, there's a prepositional phrase. And this would be the third word, te, the definite article. This would be substantive. It's not, there's, the dative case doesn't go with anything else except make reference back to grace. So in grace, the one which, we have a genitive case, the one man, a genitive case of the one man. And so let's put this in our diagram. Enkadati over on the side. Remember, we got our subject. We just didn't have room to put it in. Enkadati with the article acting substantive to move into this description of the one man. Remember, comparison with the other one man, right? So we have two, which is the definite article modifying anthropou, and henos, now modifying anthropou, one, the numeral one. In grace, that is the grace which is of the one man, and off of this anthropou for genitive, we have a Jesu Christou. So this makes anthropou and Jesu Christou apposition to each other. They're an equal to each other right here. Okay? After Jesu Christou, we have a prepositional phrase, eis to polus. See how that looks? When we diagram it, eis will go to polus, and tous, the article, will also go to polus because that's the designation of this word. And then we have our verb. Wouldn't you know it? The last word in this long sentence is the verb. So we got everything coming down. We got gar coming down from the beginning of the sentence. We have our subject off on the side, the grace of God and the gift of God. And the word abounded, aorist tense, is your verb. Remember, much more abounded. And from this verb, then the line is going to go all the way up to the top and connect with this conditional clause up at the top. That's the only way it could be connected with the rest of the sentence. It's just a conditional clause sitting up there. And you have your verb. It comes off of your verb and goes up to your conjunction for your conditional clause. These two prepositional phrases that we ended up with, all of a sudden they have a link off of the verb. Eis to polus and enkariti, the prepositional phrases. So, I don't know if we have a... No, we don't. Okay, so it started off with gar. This line, remember, is not, it's just indicating to us that the connection of this conditional clause is coming from the verb, but the verb's not there yet. That line just doesn't even exist. This is your conditional clause out here with its own subject, verb, dative case, but A opens up your conditional clause that goes down to the verb of this clause, and from the main verb, the line comes up to the conditional conjunction. So we're passing through this, showing much more. If, and since apethanon is aorist indicative, A would be a first-class condition assumed to be true. Since the many died by the transgression of the one, many and one, and they all died, the comparison is much more than this. Did the grace and gift of God do what? In grace, through this one man, something else happened that was even more. It abounded. This grace abounded unto the many. Who are the many? the many that died. And Paul is purposely not using the phrase all, because then you get right back to the problem that we have, that if all died through the transgression of one, and much more all lived because of the grace of Christ, then no one's lost. There's no, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And only many are saved. Mm-hmm. How is that much more? And how is that?
The much more is he's showing through one man how the trespass affected the human race. Okay. But, and that is a natural effect to everyone. It spreads. It's here. You got it. You know. But much more, the grace of God in comparison to the effect through one man's transgression, there is much more of an effect on man through the grace of God that has been found in the person of Jesus Christ.
But only the sum of those men. I mean, the
many.
On the surface, it looks like all are infected with a disease.
The many, yeah. Some are saved.
And you might question, well, how is that much more? And how is that grace abounding?
But that's not where he's putting the emphasis. He's not putting it on the groups. He's putting it on the effect of that group. We can say it that way. But there's a comparison between the what we've inherited by the transgression and what we have inherited through Christ is much more through Christ than through Adam. And that those are the comparisons, not the people. Not the people. And that's correct. That's correct. That's correct. So the comparison is on the gifts. I mean, it's the gift of God versus the transgression of Adam. You know, what a gift that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Even if it's only for a few.
Right.
Because every single solitary person should die.
Yes.
Should have to pay the penalty.
Right. Exactly right. So you've got comparisons all the way down. God's gift compared to what we have inherited through Adam, but also Adam's transgression compared to Christ's death on the cross. That's much more. That was a voluntary submission on his part for the effects of sin that came into the world. You know, like you say, we deserve just to die in our sins. But the gift of God is so much more in that he voluntarily and purposely came to die for our sins so that the many who would be looking for salvation, because all won't be, right? The many. These many who are looking for salvation, they're going to get much more from Christ than they did from Adam. There's much more to gain. The comparisons of the sacrifices versus the transgression, all of this is in comparison, much more. Much like Paul would say in Romans chapter 8, that the sufferings of this present time are not even to be compared with the glory that we will experience with him. And as serious as sin is, and as serious as sin has had an effect on us in the human race and us as people, yet God's gift in comparison to all that is so much more. So much more. All right, next week we will attempt, we got two more verses. We'll attempt to close out. And as far as our December schedule, we will not meet in the month of December, right? Because we only have one date that we can meet, and rather than, what? Well, 17th is the week before Christmas. If you can get it for us. I know, but we were going to give it up so they can do this. Okay.
I said to Stephanie tonight, I said,
Right.
And if we want to meet on December 24th, for that matter, we can do that.
Okay.
I'm just saying, if you want to not meet any particular night, then I will let them
know. Oh, okay. Fine. No. I'm here Christmas Day, too. That's fine. Okay, fine. Well, it's just the first week we won't be here, though, right? December 3rd, we will not be here. All the other times, we'll be here unless announced otherwise, right? Is that okay? Sure. No, that makes it more of a challenge for me. If I can give a class and make it and distribute gifts to all the kids in the world all in one night, that's a challenge. All right, let's close with prayer. Lord, thank you for your word. And it gets so complicated at times, and yet you inspired Paul for a reason. There's so many things to understand and to comprehend about the sin that has entered into the world and the Savior who brought salvation. So we thank you for choosing something that is complex and yet simple within its complexity, and at the same time things that we can think about and research and follow out after and do our studies and see the details of the doctrine that you've laid upon Paul's heart, which is the doctrine for us today. And we thank you and ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.